This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. We're going to talk some March Madness today, going away from football, but we don't have a March Madness podcast, so we figured we'd just put it on here for you all to listen to. I'm Bobby Sylvester, and you can follow me on Twitter, at BobbyFantasyPro. And we brought in the big dogs to talk some March Madness bracket selection strategy today, give some of our favorite picks. It's the guys from TeamRankings.com who have helped their subscribers win over 1.1 million in bracket pools since 2017. I've got David Hess and Tom Federico from Team Rankings to share some of our favorite picks. David, Tom, thank you for taking the time to join our show.
Thank you. Yep, good to be here, Bobby. It was fun last year. Let's do it again.
Yep, absolutely. And I know you guys are going on just a little bit of sleep because you guys are working so hard to get all the best information out there. I've really been looking forward to talking to you, mostly so I can, you know, strengthen my bracket and win some more money again this year.
Hey, we hope we can help you, Bobby. This year, we like to say that no guarantees, but you know, our track record has been pretty good. But you know, really, I think for this year, it's just all going to be a question about analyzing this crazy top-heavy bracket we've seen here. I mean, it's almost like the NCAA selection committee took their vitamins before they seeded the teams this year, and at least for the number one seeds and the number two seeds, they did a pretty darn good job.
You know, I was thinking the same thing. After the bracket came out, I was like, well, crud, who am I going to pick as a sleeper? Like, they just completely nailed it. You know, there were a few differences. I kind of wish that I would have seen Indiana and Clemson in over maybe St. John's and Temple or even Arizona State. But for the most part, teams are seeded as they should be. Not really used to that.
Yeah, especially up at the top. We were looking at we have internal power ratings that we take our raw power ratings and we adjust them for injuries and other circumstances that the raw ratings, you know, don't cover. And the top four seeds are top four in our adjusted ratings. The two seeds are 5 through 8. The three seeds are, I think, 9, 10, 12, and 13 or something. I don't remember.
That's
exactly
pretty good.
It's like,
yeah,
it's almost perfect on the 1 through 3 lines agreement with our internal rankings. So I don't think I've ever seen this before.
And that matches the betting markets too, Bobby. If we look at the futures odds, you know, the 8 most likely teams according to win the NCAA championship this year, according to futures odds, are just the number one seeds and the number two seeds all in a row.
Yeah, and usually you have some separation between the top overall team or, you know, the one seeds over like the two seeds, but most of the time they're interchangeable. I mean, this year the three top teams, they're one of the heaviest favorites of all time. And you have to keep in mind, like, when you're looking at these projection models, they're not really factoring in a lot of times that Zion Williamson was out for a while, and they only lost one game when they were fully healthy. I mean, this is one of the best teams we've ever seen, and not only them, Gonzaga and Virginia are so much better than the rest of the field too.
Yeah, and that one game they lost was by 2 points to a number one seed too.
That's so. Right. Yes.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see some of the odds come out today, Bobby, where, you know, at least a lot of the power rating systems that are out there are pretty far off the betting markets in trying to you know, assess Duke's odds to win the championship. And then, you know, it seems pretty clear that a lot of them just aren't accounting for Zion's injury. And when we looked at, you know, did our lineup analysis, and we look at every team that's in the tournament, we look at every game, and then we, you know, we look at how the team performed with or without certain players available throughout the season. And, you know, Duke is certainly a pretty binary one in terms of how good they were with Zion and how bad they were without him. But, you know, in terms of having him, right, like any system that's going to take into account all of Duke's games this season is going to underrate them.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it. And even so, they're still being picked in like 42% of brackets to win the championship. I'm not sure if that number is going to climb or come down a little bit, but that's pretty lofty to me. Let's get into the picks in just a moment, but briefly, just from a strategy perspective, Beyond crunched the numbers for over 4,000 college games, which no human can do, of course. And there's going to be people who try, and they're going to fail because they think that they can, you know, accomplish this all on their own. There's a lot of things that go into building a bracket, right? Namely, understanding your contest rules and knowing, or at least being able to guess, who your opponents are most likely to pick. So how does team rankings, what you guys have built, how do you guys make this process so easy? Because I'm a user. You guys know that. That's why we brought you guys in, is because I've seen how amazing this is. And it has helped me win. I think that it's a beautiful system. I want to understand what goes into it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, without getting, you know, too technical about it, you know, it's at the, you know, highest level, really, it's applying just, you know, it's figuring out the rules of the game and how to exploit them, right? So, you know, you mentioned game theory. You know, there, I think a lot of people today understand, especially if you play fantasy or daily fantasy, that, you know, you finding kind of values in the bracket, looking for, you know, teams that have a good chance to win it, but are getting overlooked by the public, are a source of edge. You know, score, as you mentioned, scoring systems, that's another big one for brackets as well, right? If you're in the standard 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32 points per round scoring system, if you pick your champion right, usually you're going to have a pretty great shot to win the pool, right?
It's, or at least be in the money. You will,
right,
be in the money.
It depends. It depends how many popular teams make,
yeah,
it, right? But, you know, if you're in a flatter scoring structure, like the second most popular scoring system that people use our system to get picks for example, is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. In a system like that, you get a much lower relative number of points for picking your champion correct. So that's a whole different strategy where there are more points to be won in the earlier rounds of a pool like that than the later rounds. And then finally, you've got kind of upset bonuses, right? I mean, there are a million scoring systems. I'm just kind of touching on a few. But, you know, we find, you know, a lot of people do a seed difference upset bonus, where if a 14 seed beats a 3 in the first round, you don't just get 1 point for the win, but you get 11 bonus points, the difference between 14 and 3, the seed numbers, for picking the upset. And in pools like that, you know, we generally find that, you know, you do the math, for what looks like would generate the, you know, the maximum amount of points given all the probabilities. And most people are just far too conservative in those types of pools. And, you know, you'll see in our brackets for those pools, you know, the best strategy, for example, is typically, you know, pick lots of double digit seeds or multiple ones to win a game or two. And you know, it's not going to happen, but from an expected value standpoint, let's say you pick, you know, five.
If you pick four of them and one of them turns out, it's better than picking none of them and, you know, three of them are you're correct on.
Yeah, your expected points are going to be higher than if you had picked the favorites, right? All favorites for those four or five games. So, you know, the short of it is, to get to the product, you know, a bracket has so many decisions involved in it. It's not just picking 16 NFL games a week. You're picking obviously 60 plus games. So all the optimization math involved is really tough. And we essentially just built the technology to do all the calculations automatically. We've got 18 servers at Amazon.com running around the clock, doing bracket pool simulations, and the output is a bracket that gives you the best chance to win your pool.
What a fun job. I mean, I have a really fun job too, but I know everyone else at home is thinking this. So for everyone listening, I am going to get you a code for their tools by the end of the show. I want to get into our favorite picks first. And, you know, first round upsets in a lot of these scoring systems don't matter as much. So we'll kind of ease into this, but people like to talk about it, right? It's March Madness time. Everyone wants to be picking that 12 seed or 13 seed that can win. And, you know, we were talking, the Braxton Selection Committee did a great job this year. So, I mean, the frustrating thing is, like, there's teams I'm fond of as potential upsetters that are lined up against teams I don't think will be upset. For example, Ohio State's an extremely talented 11 seed now that Caleb Wesson is back, right? But they go up against Iowa State, probably the best 6 seed. I'd love to pick New Mexico State because they're, you know, hectic, 12 deep, up-tempo style. It's perfect for March Madness, but I don't think there's any chance I'm going to pick against Auburn, who, you know, they could have been a 3 seed. The reverse is also true. Mississippi State seems vulnerable to me. But Liberty's the worst 12 seed by quite a bit, in my opinion. LSU could have lost, but they draw a 3 seed and have Yale as a result, so I'm not avoiding that one. There is one I especially like, however. UC Irvine, 13 seed, face Kansas State. And I'll break this down in a little bit, but I'm curious what your model has to say about this one. Am I way off, guys?
No, I don't think you're off at all. That is one of our biggest double-digit value picks there. I mean, I think we technically still have Kansas State favored if you just look at the adjusted ratings, but
sure,
it's by, looks like, 2.7 points, which is, you know,
that's really low for 13.
That's really low for a 4-13. So it's a great matchup there. And the reasoning there is there's a guy, John Edgar Jr., that's basically just an offensive black hole. He's like, I don't know if you're familiar with the offensive efficiency ratings on KenPom, but
yeah,
his personal rating was like it's in the 70s or 80s, which is just that's just terrible. You almost never see anything below 90, and he is getting a lot of minutes earlier in the season. Or at least,
what if he's listening?
Oh, I hope. Sorry, John. But anyway, he is no longer in the rotation, and they've just played much better since they, you know, stopped giving him the ball. Right?
Yeah, so, 30 wins, 16 game winning streak.
Yeah, they've. I mean, their full season rating doesn't represent their capability at all, and so their full resume correspondingly doesn't. And they, you know, if they were seeded based on a full season without him, and they'd probably be a couple spots higher. Well, yeah. Maybe I don't know if the committee would realize it, but you know, they're just really, they've been clicking on all cylinders since he left.
I definitely like them over Liberty. In fact, I probably like them over some of those 11 seeds who got at large bids, Belmont, Arizona State. And the thing is, no 13 seed is going to be favored over 4, but when you get one that's this close, like Kansas State, they could have very easily been a 6 seed. I mean, yeah. I'd take Nevada, Louisville, Wofford over them if I was building a bracket. They're all 7 seeds. I think Kansas State is vulnerable. And UC Irvine, they play great defense, especially inside. I mean, Kansas State plays great defense too, but they've got one of the least efficient offenses of any at large school besides maybe VCU. I think Irvine can beat him in a physical game, guys.
Yeah, especially because their offense is really dependent on Dean Wade, too. And he is, I don't know, I haven't actually looked at the news today because I've been working on our bracket stuff for a while.
Yeah.
The last time I saw, he was questionable. They weren't sure if he'd be able to go. And if he doesn't go, they're going to have a lot of trouble scoring against a good defense.
Yeah, if he doesn't go, I would almost venture to say Irvine might be the favorite in this game, or at least very close to it.
Yeah, it's possible, yeah.
All right, so, you know, when I think of upsets, guys, I think of 11 seeds or worse winning. I mean, Iowa is dangerous as a 10 seed, so is Minnesota. Frankly, the whole middle tier of the Big Ten is dangerous. If Indiana had made the tournament, or Nebraska, well, not Nebraska, because they've got some injuries. Even Penn State at 14 and 18, I could see them winning a game or two, but they're 10 seed, so it's not really an upset pick. Like, yeah, they'll win one game, and then they'll probably be out to the 2 seed. And guys, I know that this is a popular pick, and frankly, most of the country probably doesn't even know that Bol Bol is out for the season for Oregon. I think a lot of people are probably picking Oregon, you know, because they're quote-unquote hot, which I don't buy into that garbage narrative, right? But what it comes down to me is Oregon's metrics have them as about maybe a 9 seed or a 10 seed, and they're a 12 seed in the bracket. This is another low-scoring game against Wisconsin. We have two great defensive teams, and I think the lower seed here, Oregon, can steal one.
Yeah, definitely. I think in our internal ratings, they're actually up even higher, like a 5 or a 4, which sounds insane.
Wow.
But if you look at their season, though, they switched lineups in late February and started going with 4 guys that are 6'9". And after that, their defense, if you look at the game-by-game efficiency, it turned, I don't know what, what exactly happened that made them so good, but their defense has been the best in the country once you adjust for opponents over the last month. And it's just been, it was an insane difference in efficiency before
that's
and after
incredible.
That lineup switch. And they've played, if you just look at their raw performance since then, it's, I think, equivalent to a number one seed. It's but, I mean, it's six games or seven games. Or I don't, not a lot of games, right? So you have to regress it towards your prior expectations a little bit.
Sure.
But even so, I mean, you regress it halfway towards their preseason rating and they're still a five seed quality. And I'm pretty sure it's a real, I'm not saying the whole change is real, but something did change when they changed that lineup and put in the four guys that can, you know, put a hand everywhere all over the court because they're 6'9".
Yeah, you know, and that is a small sample size. But then again, you have to consider how many teams in the country or in this bracket have actually had a six-game sample size where they played one-seed basketball. I would venture to say maybe 10.
That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. It's probably not that high. You're right. Yeah, it's probably in the range of 10 to 15.
You know, something else that I love on KenPom is they've got this luck factor, which basically calculates in, you know, how efficient was the team and how many wins did they actually get? And, you know, their efficiency, if it was calculated to expected wins, how many wins would they have? And Oregon was one of the most unlucky teams in the country as well. They come in ranked 43 on KenPom. In your internal system, as you mentioned, you've got them up there as a top 20 team in the country. I think they're a dangerous team, and then they go up against UC Irvine, which is what I'm projecting here. I'm not projecting a bunch of double-digit seeds in the first round because I think when you do that, you get too cute. It can really kill your bracket. But in this sub-region here, I've got the 12 and 13 seed winning, which means either Oregon or UC Irvine would be going to the Sweet 16, and I don't think many people are going to pick that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I believe our odds have Oregon as the most likely to make the Sweet 16 out of that pod of 14.
Wow.
Which is possibly the first time that's ever happened for us to have a 12 or 13 be the most likely. But
well, were you guys doing brackets back when Missouri with, what was his name, Brandon Rush was there, and they had those three guys all going in the draft? They were like the best 12 seed I can ever remember. Were you guys doing brackets back then?
I don't think so. Was that... That was back in the 2000 aughts, wasn't it?
Yeah, I believe so. They,
I think Team Rankings was doing brackets, but I wasn't there yet. So
okay.
our methods were simpler. Simpler.
I think we released one bracket a year instead of like customizing for everyone.
I don't know what year that was, you know, or if they were even a 12 seed. I'm trying to look, but yeah. You know, oh well, they had a lot of really fun guys there. Ricky Paulding as well, I believe. But anyway, yeah, 12 seeds are not favored that often. So when you get a powerhouse like Oregon, you know, it's going to be a really popular thing to pick Murray State because they've got Ja Morant and everything like that. But you watch him play, he has a ton of raw ability. I think he can be a superstar in the NBA. With that said, his decision-making skills, especially at the end of the game, are a little bit suspect. He gets the ball in his hands. He's the only guy who's going to touch it, and he makes some bad decisions. He has some growing to do. Yeah, they can beat Marquette, but I think that's going to be the, you know, the favorite 12 seed to pick, them and Oregon. I'm just going with Oregon, and I'm pretty pumped about it.
Well, what I think is funny about the Marquette-Murray State game is you mentioned Ja Morant. He's like, oh, we've got this star guard that's going to lead them to victory. Well, Marquette has Marcus Howard.
Exactly, like, yes. Like,
they've got their own Ja Morant, but he plays in a major conference, and he's, you know, he's just as good or better. Maybe not better, but he's up there with Ja Morant.
You know, the thing about Howard is, though, even as Moran is posting, you know, 20 points, 10 assists seemingly every game, if Howard was playing on a team, you know, as competent as Murray State's surrounding cast, I don't know what he would do, but I would imagine he'd be putting up 25 points a game, right?
Oh, you're saying just because he'd have to take more of the load?
That's right, yeah. I mean, because his efficiency is remarkable, he just doesn't have to do quite as much.
Yeah. That seems reasonable.
And I said 25 points a game. He's averaging 25 points a game already. So maybe 30? I don't know.
Marcus Howard's averaging 25?
He's averaging 25 points a game,
four assists. I'm so used to looking at efficiency numbers.
Exactly,
I don't even look at per game anymore.
Yeah, I was kind of blown away when I saw that and felt like an idiot. Marcus Howard is exceptionally good, and Marquette's entire surrounding cast is substantially better. Murray State is... You know, most years I would say a weak 12 seed. This year, yeah, they're probably this. I would say the third best 12 seed because New Mexico State is pretty dangerous. 30-4, they play that up tempo pace and everything. But yeah, I think Murray State is a fade for me. Okay, guys. So you know, everyone's looking for that Sweet 16 Cinderella. There's always several that happen. In fact, last year we had a 9 seed, a 9 seed, an 11 seed that made the Elite Eight. Now that doesn't happen every year, but there's always going to be that double digit team. For me, though, I don't really see a 12, you know, a double digit team besides the one we already talked about, Oregon or UC Irvine, making it to that Sweet 16. There is one that I feel really safe about, and we'll see if you guys agree with me. If you don't, this will be interesting. I love Nevada's team this year. In fact, I have them in the Elite Eight. After beating 2-seed Cincinnati last year, they lost by 1 point in the Sweet 16. Them returned their 3 leading scorers. You know, I think few people this year realize just how much talent they have. They started the year, opened up number 7 in the coaches' poll. They haven't done much to change that. 9-3 against top 100 teams, including a 23-point win over number 8-seed Utah State. 14-point average scoring margin is 5th best in college basketball behind Gonzaga, Virginia, Duke, and Houston. And their underlying metrics in a lot of places have them as a good 4-seed or a low 3-seed above the likes of Houston, Kansas, LSU, Kansas State. And most importantly, I think their path isn't too bad. Florida's 3-12 against top 50 teams. Michigan, maybe the weakest 2-seed. Texas Tech has some questions on offense. They're a pretty good 3-seed. But what do you guys think about Nevada making it to the Sweet 16 and maybe beyond?
There's another one that we agree with you on. I mean, I wouldn't say that we think they have a great chance to make the Sweet 16, just that they are underseeded for their quality. I think
that's how I would put it as well. Okay.
Yeah. We have them as a roughly number 4-seed quality if you just rank all the teams, and they're down there at the 7. Michigan, I think you said they're the weakest 2, and yeah, our numbers agree with that, but they're still good. Like, you know, number 8 is a good team still. It's not like some years where the weakest 2 should be a 3 or a 4. They're 2 quality. So we still have them favored to get out of that region.
I agree. If it comes down to that game, I think Michigan would probably be, what, a 5-6 point favorite?
Let's see. I think we have them. Oh, whoa, we only have them as a 3-point favorite, it looks like.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that is pretty tight for a 2-7 matchup. And you're right. I mean, Michigan comes from the Big Ten. And the Big Ten is not getting anywhere near as much credit because the ACC has those 3 powerhouses. But in terms of depth, the Big Ten was beating itself up all season long. Michigan had a really tough schedule. They played, 27 teams in the top 100 this year. That doesn't happen very often, right?
No, they played a really tough schedule. I think everyone from the Big Ten is, which is why people were, I don't know how often you're on Twitter wasting time, but there was a lot of discussion on college basketball Twitter about the Big Ten getting teams into the tournament with the losing record and whether that would happen, and because they were so
strong
this year. Yeah.
Yeah. And if Nebraska didn't have the injuries, they would have been in and been really dangerous. I don't know. I wish they would put the best teams in the tournament, but I understand, you know, all the mid-majors and everything like that and the TV value of it. But yeah, I think Nevada is a dangerous team. And don't forget, Eric Musselman has shown some magic in March before. Do you guys buy into that certain coaches, you know, regardless of the talent or the resume, are just better in March? Is that an actual thing?
I don't really put much stock in it.
Okay.
I know I used to hear Izzo was the best March coach, always overperformed, and then they lost in the first round as a 2-seed, right?
Like, you're right.
And then the reverse, Jay Wright can't win, and then Villanova wins 2 out of 3 years. So I think it's almost all just narrative. The one this year is Virginia. Virginia can't win, right? Because they lost to 16 last year. They've never made it as far as they should. But, I mean, they're a really good team. I don't think that last year's loss without DeAndre Hunter really means much for their prospects this year.
If Duke loses that game to UNC in the ACC championship, I think Virginia's the number 1 overall seed. And rather than being, you know, what is it right now, 7% of brackets have them winning at all, I think it would be closer to 20%. Because if you sit at the top left of that board, you're going to get a lot of people picking you. And I get it. Duke has Zion Williamson, and they've got the 2 other, you know, lottery picks and everything. But Virginia, they shoot the crap out of the ball, and they're really good at it. And that does make them a little vulnerable to lose. But they can also, you know, they're probably the favorite in every game that they would play except for against Duke.
Yeah, I think Virginia and Gonzaga are about, they're even essentially in our ratings, and the only team ahead of them is Duke. But Duke is a couple points ahead of them.
Yeah. You know, in regards to the coaching narrative and everything, I think that you guys are probably onto something. There's one exception that I would make, and it's teams, you know, like Shaka Smart. Obviously, they're not, you know, dancing or anything like that. But Jim Boeheim with Syracuse, they play that zone defense that is so difficult for you to prepare for in a short tournament environment. Is that something that you guys write into your code, or is that not really have historical precedent either?
Yeah, you know, I think you're right about Syracuse. That's probably the one example there where
they just an outlier. Just
always, what'd you say?
Is it just an outlier?
I think their style, like you said, you can't prepare for it very well on short rest. So I think it's an outlier in that there are not very many or any other teams that really have that zone with those athletes year to year. So if there were others that did it, then they would probably also be outliers.
Yeah, it's always really funny to me looking at these, you know, these brackets and how many of them have Syracuse not only making the Sweet 16, but making the Final Four. And they've got, there's more people picking Syracuse to win it all than teams like, you know, Iowa State and everything. There are so many believers in Boeheim, and I don't think they're getting past Gonzaga. That's going to be a popular one, too, because everyone's like, Gonzaga always fails. No, no, that's not true. Gonzaga has a really good team this year, too. That upset's not happening. At least I don't believe so.
Yeah, Gonzaga's been really consistent in the tournament, actually. Aren't they?
Yeah.
Haven't they made the Sweet 16 the most years in a row out of any active team or something like that?
I believe
that?
Like so. They've made the Final Four as many times as everyone except for, I believe, Villanova and one other team. You know, they made the championship game a couple times as well. Yeah, they tend to always produce, and they've got the players this year, too. I could definitely see them winning it all. In fact, I'm probably going to have them in the majority of my brackets. And let's transition to, you know, getting a sleeper to win it all, because everyone wants to have that, you know, that sexy team that everyone's going to look at their bracket and say, they have who winning it all? And then maybe they win it and they can get, you know, a lot of praise and everything. I've got to say, guys, I'm picking Virginia or Gonzaga to cut down the nets because, like I said, only 7% of brackets worldwide have them winning it, when in reality, their odds are probably closer to 15%. Maybe even 20%. Okay, Duke is the heavy favorite, right? I don't want to get too cute with my champion, but if you're in a huge contest, maybe you could pick Virginia Tech or Auburn and Florida State, who could win it. You're probably going to be the only person picking them, and especially Auburn. Guys, this is what I'm seeing. They played Duke tight on a neutral court. They just beat 2-seed Tennessee by 20 points, forced more turnovers per game, which is really difficult to go up against in March Madness. It was the most in college basketball. And more importantly, they shoot the three about as effectively as any team in the country not named Virginia. Over 43% of their points came off the three ball. And guards, you know, guard-heavy teams tend to do well in these tournaments. And while that makes them vulnerable, it also means they can beat anyone any night. I'm not saying Auburn has a good chance, maybe like a 2% chance, but like 0.3% are picking them right now. They've got 17 wins against top 100 teams, which is one fewer than UNC, two fewer than Virginia. What do you guys think about Auburn as a sleeper? Maybe not championship team, but Final Four squad.
Yeah, I think if you were to make a list of the top sleepers for Final Four, Auburn would probably be on there. Looking at our data here, it looks like they're maybe sixth if you look at the odds to make it to the Final Four and the public pick percentage, and then you subtract, and then you just sort by that, they're sixth. So there's Michigan State, Texas Tech, Purdue, Kentucky, Nevada, and then Auburn. So I don't think twos and threes really count too much as dark horses. So you got Nevada and Auburn, basically. Yes.
Yeah. Those are my teams, guys. I am going
you're
with
killing
those teams.
It here.
Well, I mean, I'm really glad you guys agree with me. Like, you guys have no idea how good this is making me feel.
I don't remember us agreeing with you so much
last
year.
No, I don't think that was the case. You know why?
Because read our article.
I listened to you guys, and you guys made me a lot smarter with this stuff.
Well, I do think the it was a good segue because, you know, back to what I kind of kicked off with at the beginning of the pod, this year being so top heavy, you know, it's interesting because usually, you know, I think I would say the conventional smart bracket picking wisdom is that in really big pools, go find yourself an undervalued, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 seed that has a, you know, that's extremely underrated, but still has a, you know, a legitimate chance, even if it's, you know, a couple percent or 5-6% to win it all, and kind of that's your strategy, right? You're going kind of all in on this contrarian champion pick, and I think, you know, for years, quite frankly, we just agreed with that. We hadn't really, before we built our current technology that actually runs millions of simulations for different scoring systems and things like that, you know, at a high level, you know, qualitatively, it sort of seems to make sense, right? It's the,
yeah,
it's the value based approach. But, you know, then you get a year like this year where, you know, we're giving a 68% chance that a number one seed wins the tournament this year. And as we talked about before, you know, the eight strongest teams to win the eight most likely teams to win the tournament are all the number one seeds and all the number twos. So,
and that's not common. Yeah.
Not common, right? So when you have a situation like that, well, you know, here's a kind of comparison on the numbers. So this year, I think David mentioned Texas Tech, right? Number three seed. So outside of the top eight seeds in the tournament, they are our, you know, best contender basically to win it all, but their title odds are only 2.4%. So just to put that in comparison, sort of historically, last year, the best kind of non one or two seed, three seed or worse to win the title was Michigan State. They were 5.9%. So that's more
like
than
triple.
Twice as good, right? Basically more than twice as good. 2016, it was Kentucky. They were a four seed. They had 6.4% title odds. So that's almost three times as good. If you go back to 2014, you find Louisville, which was a four seed. They had almost 11% title odds. So just, you know, 5 years ago, we had a team that was a four seed that literally had over four times as good odds as the best, you know, non-number one or two seed this year to win it all. So in terms of actually, you know, picking this sort of dark horse, you know, mid seed range team to kind of make a deep run, it just looks like a terrible year to do that, or I should say an extremely risky year to do that compared to the past.
It's a good way to put it. You know, every year is so different.
Yeah, there's a second aspect to that, which is Virginia and Gonzaga have great value, so you don't need to drop down to a three team. Like, I think we have both of them around 14% to win, and they're being picked by about 7% of the public. So when you can have a 2x multiplier there in your champion and still have a 14% chance to win, you kind of want to do that instead of going for your 3x multiplier that's only a 2% team.
Yeah.
And then just throw in a couple more value picks in other places that can give you a little bit of an edge.
You're almost definitely not going to win your bracket contest unless you pick the winner. Unless some team like Maryland wins it all or something like that, yeah. which stuff like that could potentially happen. But what I'm saying is, like, if you pick the winner, you are in, you've got a chance to win it all. And if you are doubling your odds of picking the winner compared to your contest, I mean, you're doubling your chance of winning the whole contest, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the other point here, though, is just like, you know, there are years where it's a completely wide open field relatively. Yep. Right. And so,
yeah, it's definitely not
picking a champion in those years, picking a champion in your bracket that is, you know, sort of just kind of going more extremely by value. You know, you might be able to pick a team in some years where you're actually not really sacrificing that much in terms of risk. You know, they're a team that's not that much more unlikely to win it all than the, you know, the big most popular favorite.
Yeah.
But they're also really underrated. Great.
Kind of like Utah in 2015. Man, I was so pumped about that pick, guys. And then they barely lost to Duke in the Sweet 16. If they had won that game, they were going all the way. I was going to win my contest.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this year it's not the year this year, right?
Yeah.
So you get a team where you pick the Texas Tech to kind of make the run, and, you know, compared to the most likely tournament winner, you know, you got less than 10%. Chance to kind of get that right compared to Duke, right? And then, like you said, and I think David brought up a stat today. I think this is the first time ever in our running our projections that a team with is it 40% odds to make the Final Four, David, is undervalued.
Oh yeah, right. We haven't seen before. Virginia and Gonzaga both have over 40% chance to make the Final Four according to our projections, and the public is picking them at a lower rate than their projected win odds, so they have value.
That's crazy.
We've never seen a team. Usually the public is heavy on the favorites, and there's no value in the favorites, but you pick them anyway because they have such high odds to make it to the spot. I've never seen before teams with 40% chance to make the Final Four that are also undervalued. So, you know, it's kind of almost a no-brainer pick. You want to do it in almost every bracket. I mean, if you're entering a bunch, you know, diversify. But if you're only entering one, it almost doesn't matter what size pool it is. You got to go with such a great value pick.
But it kind of makes sense too, right? When you got like such a top-heavy field, there are sort of these eight legitimate teams in people's minds. I think from a public's perspective, you know, a lot of people in the public probably think, you know, Kentucky, Gonzaga, Michigan, Virginia. You can kind of come up with a reason to like or not like all those teams. Like, you know, by the numbers, Virginia, yes, is like definitely among the strongest, but someone will say, oh, but you know, they lost in the ACC tournament. They, you know, they've been exposed or whatever. So I can, you know, the circumstances there are ripe for the public to kind of, you know, sort of split up their picking trends across like multiple of these strong sounding teams. And then the result is you get, you know, these situations like a one seed underrated to make the Final Four, which is unheard of literally in past years.
You know, and it's really strange because Tennessee is an extremely dangerous team, but the thing is the difference between Virginia and Tennessee is probably larger than the difference between Tennessee and Louisville, who's like a 9 seed, because Virginia is that good. Gonzaga, Duke especially is that good. You know, and the good thing is everyone is wising up and catching on to these strategies, but they're probably a year late. So hopefully they're going out there, they're picking, you know, the Wisconsins and Florida State, trying to get cute, and we can just go Gonzaga, Virginia, Duke, and maybe a sleeper team in the other region, and you know, nail our bracket again.
Well, if that's the hope, we'll see. I mean, obviously, and like we said, I mean, all this is kind of couched in the, you know, in the context of we're kind of talking about a standard rules pool, right? Where it's, you know, extremely back heavy in terms of the later rounds of the tournament being absolutely important. So, yeah, the rules are and the situation's much different if that's not the case. You know, there are a lot of people in pools with, you know, little wrinkles, whether it's the points you win per round, or like we said before, the upset point. So, you know, that certainly changes things. And, you know, in our optimal brackets for, say, upset pools as an example, we're still seeing, you know, kind of more aggressive picking, of course, than what we're talking about. But, you know, that, like you said, in terms of every year being different, that's what you do this analysis for. You know, I think there are going to be some years where you take, even like, it's just interesting that the conventional smart bracket wisdom, it doesn't really apply as well this year. So the people who are sort of thinking they learn the right thing about, hey, pick an undervalued, under the radar champion, you know, 2 seed, 3 seed, 4 seed, they've sort of been trained on that for several years. Well, guess what? Like 2019 throws you a curveball.
That's right. Like the year when we had 4 number one seeds make the Final Four, and everyone was like, so why are these guys, you don't know what they're doing, winning my bracket?
I was going to bring that year up. That was one of the best years we've ever had. It may have been the best year we've ever had. It was in 2008. Like David said, we didn't have we hadn't built this, the current technology we have that runs millions of simulations. We were just, you know, doing kind of calculations in Excel and things like that. But, you know, I mean, boil it down, like that year, 2008, the one seeds were clearly the strongest teams. And then you had the situation where the public never really wants to believe that the final will be all ones. It's like definitely every unskilled bracket picker is saying, all right, like who's going to be my Final Four non-number one pick?
Yeah.
Right. And so, and that, you know, and every time we recommended something like that, like I can remember that year, as you can imagine, you know,
I can imagine your email blew
huge
up.
Amount of flack, right? And you say, and it's just like, the, you know, A, it's not going to happen. It never happens. B, what's so ingenious about this bracket? I'm paying you guys to sort of figure out the, you know, the crazy unknown pick that's going to make it. But, you know, our value is to run all the numbers and figure out what the best chance to win is. And, you know, the irony of the whole situation, though, is, you know, like you said, when you come out and say, okay, like that year, 2008, 4 number ones, like, and obviously it wasn't just 4 number ones. Picking, once you get there, right, it's, you know, picking the, obviously, your finalists and then your champion obviously has a lot to do it as well. Yeah. But for some reason, people put these goggles on. They just look at the Final Four first, right? Like even this year, like if you look at the Final Four and you see all somebody's got a Final Four bracket, you know, that's all one seeds, and then, you know, has Duke advancing to the final or winning the whole thing versus Gonzaga or Virginia, that's a huge difference. Like people don't understand how big of a difference that is in terms of the risk reward trade off and kind of where it might make more sense to use Duke or Gonzaga or Virginia. It's actually a very big difference, but people just kind of put the blinders on, just look at that Final Four. And, you know, ironically, it ends up, you know, being basically our best year ever, right? Because they all the one seeds made it, and nobody wanted to pick them. So we'll take it.
All right, guys. I have one more thing to run by you. It's a team that I think a lot of people are hyping up. I'm fading them. And then we're going to give you guys a code so that you guys can use team rankings and, you know, be part of the hopefully $1.1 million won from some subscribers this year. So Kansas right now is being picked to make the Sweet 16 in half of brackets. And I get it, right? I mean, they were ranked preseason number one, but you guys have to pay attention. They lost to Udoka Uzubuki and LeGerald Vick for the season. I mean, those are their two best players. Plus, Silvio De Sousa was ruled ineligible for the year, too. Guys, I think Auburn is the better team. I expect them to just wipe the floor with Kansas and Salt Lake City the same way eight other teams have already done to Kansas away from Lawrence this year. What do you guys think?
Well, I don't know if I'd say that we expect them to wipe the floor.
Okay.
With Kansas,
yeah, that's probably hyperbolic.
Yeah, we do have Auburn as the better team there by a couple of points. I'd also say probably Dedrick Lawson is their best player, which you didn't mention.
Okay. He's really good.
But yeah, I'm a Kansas fan. I grew up in Kansas, and it's been a disappointing season for sure. I was pretty excited at the start, and now I have no... I'm not even hopeful that they'll do anything in this tournament.
I'm sorry.
Like you said, they've been trash away from Lawrence. But yeah, they're one of the weakest fours. They and Kansas State are definitely the two weakest fours this year, and they have a great chance of losing.
Are you from Lawrence?
No, I'm from Wichita.
Okay, so you've had Pizza Shuttle from Lawrence, right?
No, I have not.
Oh, that's really sad for you, because Pizza Shuttle is one of my favorite pizzas in the world. They put cream cheese on their pizza as a base, and it is amazing. Guys, I'm telling you, it's really good.
Tom's going to break off.
You're talking to a guy who went to Naples 2 years ago. Naples, Italy, not Naples, Florida, to take pizza making lessons, Bobby. So I don't want to hear it.
Do they put cream cheese on it in Naples?
You know, everyone who's listening knows that this question is coming. What do you guys think about putting butter on your pizza?
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Like,
does that make you really sad?
Does not compute. Well, I didn't know until I went to California for school. I didn't know about the whole ranch on pizza thing, which was a big deal. I mean, ranch dressing is kind of like is the official food of California in general. Well, non-ethnic food of California. I actually, you know, I came over to the dark side there for my traditionalist tendencies.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
With the ranch on the pizza crust thing. But if you want to ask David about Wichita food, though, you got to ask him about Sancho's.
Ooh, what? Okay, now I'm curious. What are Sancho's?
A Sancho is... well, I grew up thinking that it was a burrito with lettuce and tomato inside.
Awful.
Because apparently there's one place in Wichita that used the name for it. And then I learned a couple years ago that a Sancho is actually a guy who your girlfriend cheats on you with. And apparently this one place in Wichita is the only place that calls it a Sancho. And I've been using the word Sancho my whole life.
I never knew that either. It does sound like a good burrito. I love my burritos and I love my pizza. Before I had this job, I managed a pizza restaurant, and I was going to franchise a pizza. I love my pizza. Everyone knows that. So, guys, that's enough for the banter back and forth and everything. It was a lot of fun talking March Madness with you guys. Everyone who's listening to the show, I'm telling you, I've been using team rankings. I could not recommend it more. This isn't like, you know, just some pitch for some sponsor. I wanted to bring team rankings on because their stuff is awesome, and I want you guys to win. So where can they sign up to get your info?
Yeah, you can go to teamrankings.com/fantasypros. We set up a page there where you can get 10% off on our bracket picks this year for anyone who's listening to the podcast. That's the sign-up page, so feel free to just go to the site, teamrankings.com. You can go to the bracket picks product and learn more about it. But if you decide you want to sign up, teamrankings.com/fantasypros will get you a deal.
As long as we're doing a little pitch here, I think it might be worth mentioning that we customize portfolios too. So up to five brackets. I know that's a thing in DFS, right? You play multiple lineups to.
Oh, yes. Good call.
Yeah. So that I think might be something that you listeners might be interested in. It's not a huge portfolio. We don't do 100 brackets, but we do five bracket portfolios for for your pools.
That's really cool. And you guys do all kinds of stuff too, like Survivor and everything. And not just for March Madness, but for football. If you guys are listening to this and you're more football guys than March Madness guys, don't forget team rankings for football, because their Survivor information is awesome.
Yeah, that's kind of, that's actually our most popular subscription, is we run a yearly subscription that covers football pools as well as March Madness.
Cool.
So yeah, on the football side, there's weekly, you know, weekly pick'em pools as well as NFL Survivor pools and College Football Bowl pools that all use the same general approach to, you know, optimizing your picks based on game theory and scoring systems.
Awesome, guys. It is always a pleasure. Really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk with us. Even though you guys have so much going on this time of year, it's always a joy to talk to you. And I'm really especially glad that you guys validated my opinion on some of these teams.
I can't believe we agreed with you.
I know. Yeah. It's so weird. It's so weird. I'm learning, guys. You guys helped me so much. All right, guys. Hope to talk to you next year, and good luck with everything.
All right. Sounds good, Bobby. Thanks.
All right, guys, we've got more draft and off-season content coming for the NFL podcast, and also it's the Fantasy Pros Baseball podcast right now if you want to check that out. For the guys at Team Rankings, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your basketball. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home, where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.